For those of you who don't know Don Rutledge, he is on the staff at the Baptist Home Mission Board here in Atlanta. He also is one of those 17 guys that Howard Chapman talked about yesterday that's on the staff of Black Star, on retainer by Black Star. He works out of Atlanta, very, very fine photographer, a very active photographer, a very involved photographer. Some of y'all may have seen his blurb or his cover jacket on his new book out front. That's about all I've got to say to Don. I'd like to get him up here to start his sermon, and I think y'all will really enjoy it.
Now, this whole group is very sadistic. Last night we were talking, and quite a few folks knew that I was extremely nervous because Gene Smith is here, and here I am talking about photography, and he has had a lot of influence in my life. And we were talking about it last night, quite a few of us reading together and joking. And so we came back to the motel, and I kept suggesting to Mr. Smith, you know, why don't you wait and sleep late in the morning, come in time for your speech, you know, at 11 o'clock and et cetera. And so we've been joking quite a bit about it. And so Tommy and Henry Mills, they had come back together. And so Gene came over and put his arms on my shoulder, and he said, Don, I want you to know that I'm going to be there in the morning. And that, you know, was nerve-wracking right there. And he said, I'm going to be sitting on the front seat. And that was the second level of being sadistic. And they said, I'm going to sleep. So, but I do want to talk about photography this morning in relation to how we can think about photographs, how we can see photographs, how we can use the camera to communicate, because I think that this is the center, the basic purpose, the reason why all of us are involved in photography, especially, of course, if it has to do with some kind of a reproduction as news photographers or whatever level as a press photographer a person might be involved. And so immediately we're saying to ourselves, how can I photograph so that that I can think, I can put it together? How can I see in such a way that I have the ability to be able to say some of the things that are extremely important? I think sometimes when we talk about photographing, we fail to realize that and there is more to it than just simply shooting a picture and saying, I hope other photographers like what I'm doing. Because beyond this, the important person we're trying to reach is not only other photographers, which is great, of course, but with the important person we're trying to reach is the one who sees the pictures, the viewer, the individual who is able to pick up the paper or the publication and to say, here is something about the world in which I live. And these, in the long run, are the people who become the judges. And they're important people. They don't have any hang-ups the way we do, and these hang-ups are important to us, the technical things of the composition and the mood, the lighting. All of these things, of course, are extremely important. But these people, more than likely, know nothing about these things and really don't care about them. Either the photograph communicates to them or it doesn't communicate. It's that simple with them. They either look at it and they say, this is something being said to me, or else they lay the paper down and forget it. So it is at that point that photography becomes extremely important to us. How can I and how can you communicate in such a way that these people, we move them emotionally, intellectually, or whatever? Well, there are several approaches to photography. And in fact, of course, these are, I want to mention them. We recognize that they are around, but sometimes we do not put them together. I would say on, let's say, almost any news staff, as well as across-the-board photographers, there are three kinds of photographers. First, there's a professional snapshooter who is always around. This is the individual who just likes to take pictures, you know, and beyond that, it really doesn't bother one way or the other about the photographing. The individual who doesn't, you know, the old things that bother so many photographers, the cliche things of the awards and the shaking of hands and things like this. well, this is a professional snap shooter who doesn't really, it doesn't bother him one way or the other. Just goes out and the situation is there, and so just shoots it, and that's all there is to it. And so the person becomes a snap shooter only. Then there's a second group of photographers who base their message almost entirely on gimmicks. It can be a lens, or it can be a certain style or approach, but it becomes a gimmick, the kind of thing that is always standing between the subject and the viewer, the kind of thing that forces some kind of an artificiality, that when the person looks at the picture, they're saying unconsciously, there's something wrong here. It's not realism. It's not true to life. And I personally have strong feelings about a photograph, especially in the area of photojournalism. If the photograph has some kind of a blockage, some kind of a barrier that stops the viewer from seeing and understanding and feeling what's going on, this, of course, becomes a psychological thing. And again, it's the matter of going beyond the camera itself, beyond the photographer, and coping with the individual who is looking. Now, as photographers, we look at the photograph and we start talking about all the technical things. And sometimes we get so hung up on this that we just stop there. And that's important. And of course, it should just be understood that these things are taken care of and done well. But beyond that, we should come to the place where the technical is so much a part of us. And the technical does not interfere and become an artificial kind of thing. It is swept aside, and simply we go to the subject, and something strongly is said in the photograph. We'll be talking about some of those things in a few moments. But the gimmick user, the individual whose way of communicating with others is the use of the gimmick. Now, maybe in some ways there's not all that much wrong with it for some people. I don't know. It's okay if they want to use it. For me, it's not very good. Ouija, for example, used the gimmicks in a lot of different ways and acquired quite a name for himself in the use of gimmicks. But beyond this, there's a third group, and this is a group that I really would like to talk about today. And this is the group that comes to the fullness of photography. The individual who is concerned about taking the camera and spanning the gap between where he or she is and moving into the life of individuals, someone, somewhere, and saying, I want to say something to this person. I want to communicate with them. I want to be able to say a message that is important to me. This is something that I want you to recognize and something I want you to think about and maybe to be involved in yourself. Now, how this comes about becomes a very interesting thing. Ernest Haas made the statement once that all great photographers have three things, and I think that this is where it is involved here. He said they have an eye, and they have a brain, and they have the heart. And there is no great photographer that does not have all three of those things. The eye to see, the ability to look beyond what the average person sees and to see something that is strong and powerful, and to interpret that by removing that element, removing that segment of the world out of the chaotic world around and really saying something strongly, real strongly with the camera. The eye, being able to see. We'll also talk about that in a few moments. But this thing of the heart, a sensitivity. Did you, those of you who were here this morning and saw the series on Allard, as he was talking about his work, the American cowboy, the Amish, the people in the Basque country, all of these different ones, and as he talked, there was some kind of a sensitivity about this individual that you could tell it was more than just taking a camera in hand, but it was an identifying. It was an understanding of who people are, where they are, and what's going on in the world. How important this thing is. It's a lot more than just a photographer grabbing a camera and running out and saying, I've got all the technical knowledge and I'm going to put it together and here it is. But a sensitivity to individuals. That's why a lot of times photographers miss some of the most important things, because they go rushing in on top of individuals. They dominate the situation, and I know that sometimes This has to be done because of time, but it's also overdone and even becomes a cop-out. But anyway, they run in and dominate the person, and they say to the individual, here's what you do, do this, instead of allowing the person to do what they actually do. And so it becomes us, our personality, rather than the individual, the subject that we're trying to talk about and to say something strongly with and for. Well, all of these things are extremely important, the ability to understand. Now, what it all winds up to is this, to me, is not for it to be a professional snap-shooting kind of thing, or just saying, I like photography, so I just go out and aim the camera and fire. Or to say that the only way I can communicate with others is to use some kind of a gimmick. Even though, again, sometimes that's all right. In my own case, I have all kinds of lenses and equipment and things. I don't always use them, but they're there because someday I need them and I use them. But if I depend only on those to communicate what I'm trying to say, becomes a gimmick to me. And then the thing of just using the eye and using the heart and the brain to put it all together. And whenever we start doing that, then it becomes a kind of thing where we just have to stand flat-footed right in the world itself and to say, this is the world. And then to come up with some visually strong images. Now, that's hard to do. It's just flat hard to do. And it's at this point that too many photographers just absolutely cop out. Because what happens is we build ourselves up to a peak and we say, I want to say something. I want to say it forcefully. I want to say it for a long period of time. I want it to mean something around. And so we start moving up into this area. And when we come to that peak, it is so difficult. There is a lot of energy involved. There is a lot of thinking involved. There is a lot of effort on our own that goes beyond the average day's work. And so when we come to that peak, we can do one of two things. We can move along that peak and say, I'm going to look at the world and I'm going to photograph the world and I'm going to make it as strong as I personally can. We can do that and expend a lot of energy and do a lot of things that are very difficult to do, or we can slide back down the hill and say, I want to use the gimmicks again, or I want to become only a snap shooter. And this is a choice that every photographer makes on his own or on her own. Nobody else can possibly make it for us. And so because of that, there are a lot of times we come to the point of copping out and we use excuses. And I think there are three excuses that are used a zillion times over. And all three of them have some validity. There are times when these three have some strong validity, but it's amazing how often we use these excuses to cop out. For example, how many times do we say, I'd like to do strong photography, but there's not enough time. I just don't have enough time. That's been said over and over and over again. And sometimes, again, I know that there is a validity to this. I also know that the average photographer in a newspaper will cover about, on average, a 3 or 4 assignments today. Some more, some a lot, some less, and some quite a few more, according to the paper and the staff and whatever. Well, one of the things that if we could do in our lives as photographers is to take all of the handicaps and turn them around and turn them into advantages. Every once in a while, I run into somebody in different fields. I ran into a fellow in an area some time ago who did that. And it's a beautiful thing to see a person walk up to a wall of handicaps and just to say, here are the handicaps, here are the problems, and then to say, how can I take this handicap and reverse it into an advantage? There's a way to do that. For example, when we say that I just don't have enough time, when we talk about the basics of it, all photographs are taken in a split second. Anywhere from, let's say, a 30th handheld up to, 2,000 if you have a F2, okay? All right, so it means that when we snap that shutter, that's the period of time it takes us to make the photograph. But where we get ourselves all tangled up is this. And we're saying, I just don't have enough time to make the photograph because we're thinking I'd like to build up to it. And yet, in the long run, if we, in the slow times, would discipline ourselves to build to the peak and to make strong photographs in those times, then when things are happening very, very fast, we would be ready. And there is an unconscious or subconscious kind of thing that just forces us to do things right at the right time if we've disciplined ourselves back there. Several times I remember shooting photographs when things were happening real fast, real quickly. And I was saying to myself after it was all over, I wondered, you know, did I really put that together composition-wise and this and that? And then later, when I looked at the photograph, I was amazed at how it had all come together. It was almost as if I had 2 days to do the shooting. Now, what had happened is that I had to train myself and discipline myself in the times when things were just moving along easily. I had to discipline myself to do it well enough so that when I had to do it very quickly, I was ready for that, and it was a part of my thinking, and immediately it started working. Every photographer should just say, okay, I don't have enough time. That's a disadvantage. But I'm going to discipline myself to think quickly, to size up the surroundings, to make my decisions, and to start seeing immediately what can be done with a bad situation. And if we would all do that, it would be amazing how much difference would come about in our photographing. The second thing that we're always talking about is we're talking about the photo editor, you know, that he doesn't understand, which is a lot of times is true. Again, there's a lot of validity in this, and I'm the first one to admit that there is a lot of validity in this. But also, what we should do again is to take a disadvantage and turn it around into an advantage. There is not a person in this room who has not had some kind of problem with somewhere along the way about photographs. That's just a way of life. And any photographer who wants to get out of the rut where the stale air is with a zillion photographers, if he wants to, or she wants to get out of that rut and get up above this on top of the rim and start breathing and being real creative in photography, that person has got to say immediately, I have troubles. I have problems. It's just going to be a part of it. Because the average world around us lives in this kind, and I'm not being pessimistic, you understand, but they live in a form of a rut or a norm. Everybody is in this norm. And anyone who says, I don't want in that rut, I want something a little different, that person is immediately going to cause some kind of friction. And it's one of the things we have to accept and to realize. That's why a lot of photographers say, I don't want to rock the boat. I just want to sit in the boat and go downstream. And so they sit in the boat and they go downstream. Unless somebody comes along, tips it over, somebody else. They just move along. Then there's the other kind of photographer who says, well, I just like to rock the boat for the sake of rocking the boat. And they don't really have a good reason for it. They just like to rock boats, and so they rock boats. Then there's the other individual who says, I know that sometimes the boat must be rocked. If I'm going to do something worthwhile, the boat has to be rocked. Well, they do it being sensitive to others and trying to help others to understand. One of the reasons why we have trouble a lot of times with photo editors, well, there are two or three reasons. One is because in the past, photographers did not want to take responsibility a lot of times on newspapers I'm talking about. They did not want to take responsibility. They wanted the writers to make out the assignment sheets, to come through the chiefs and so forth. They wanted to know if they wanted handshaking or if they wanted to hold up the awards, all that old kind of junk. And so the photographer would just go out and shoot the picture and come back in and sit down. Everybody was happy. Well, after a long period of time like this, then writers think that photographers expect this of them. And when new photographers come along and say, look, you know, I really don't want that, then it causes confusion because nobody understands. It's always been done the other way. And so they got this problem that comes up. But there's another thing, too. And that has to do, when we talk to a photo editor or to anyone about the photographs, one of our big problems often is this. We say to the individual, I'm a great photographer. You have no idea how good a photographer I really am. And if you only gave me a chance, I would prove it to you. This is a point where one picture is worth 1,000 words. that editor has heard that statement over and over and over and over again, and has seen photographer after photographer after photographer bring in just mediocre work. Why should he believe us at that point? Why should he trust me if I walk up to an editor and say, look, I'm a fine photographer. I can do a terrific job for you, but I never lay on his desk a strong photograph. Why should he believe me? Okay, so then all at once, some of the responsibility starts getting on my own shoulders. And what will make a huge difference for anyone, and I speak this from the experience of working this thing out in my own life. You should hear some of the problems I've gone through over periods of time. You would cry. Some of you wouldn't even believe some of the situations. Okay, so what happens is we wind up with this point of saying, I have a problem. I have a handicap. I must overcome this handicap. And so what we can do is we can go to the photo editor. We can lay down the photograph, or to whoever. We can lay down the photograph and we can say, this is something I consider strong. And then to explain why it is strong, to show what we're trying to do. Whoever we can cut, if it is with the chief or beyond the chief or wherever it is, the individual we can communicate with, and to try to say, here is something that I'm saying. Words prove nothing for photographers. And that's important for us to realize. We talk about another excuse, the bad use of pictures. And that again, we all have been involved in things that bother us here, the bad use of pictures. But when we have a strong picture, and that strong picture is misused, we can go in and talk about this. And we can say, here is my photograph. Again, here's what I was trying to say. And here is the reason why I personally feel that it was used wrongly. See, what it actually winds up to is it just comes up to or down to a thing of an educational thing. We have to educate people. We first of all have got to know what we're talking about ourselves. That's the beginning right there. Again, words don't mean a thing if we can't back them up with our photography. But once we are at that point, then the next thing we have to do is to educate people. I say I don't have enough time. Okay, I've got to prove it by saying, here's what I could do, what I did do with more time. Here's what I had to do because I didn't have enough time. And anyone who is involved in it would at least be sensitive enough that they will start noticing. Now, I'm not talking about it's going to work the first time we go in. That's ridiculous. It's not going to work the second time or the third time or whatever. But take a staff of photographers, a strong staff of photographers who come in with strong pictures enough of the time to prove their point, somebody sometime is going to start listening. And we need to think about these things instead of just copping out and saying, I'm going to give up. Some time ago, in fact, I'm going to show it in a few moments on the presentation. But some time ago, I was shooting some pictures in an astrology shop here in Atlanta. And the writer was interviewing the owner of the shop. And while he was interviewing her, I was shooting some pictures of the activity. I had two choices. I could do a mug shot of her, or I could move back and do something of the environment in which where she was. Now, what we can do is, when we do the mugshot, we can do it in such a way that it just becomes another person. She's an astrologist, but she would just become another person in this huge world in which we're living. Or I could make the choice of saying I'm going to include some of her environment in. While she was talking here, there's a big flag of a thing over on this side with Leo the Lion. And over on this side was something else, and back here was something else, which gave a beautiful depth to the picture. And so I included all of these in. Now, if later I had taken this, let's say, to a newspaper or wherever, and I walked in and I gave it to the individual that would be taking it at that point, and they took this and they chopped it down where there's nothing left but just the picture of the woman, I could easily take the picture in and lay it down on the desk and say, here's what I was saying, and here's how you destroyed it. Then, when I show this visual proof, then the editor can look and say, sure, I see what you're talking about. And tomorrow, he's going to think a little more about that, and the next day, he's going to think a little bit more about it. But again, if I come in and say, here's a mugshot, I could have done better, but I know this is the only thing we use, and so that's it. And so he says, okay, and smiles, and goes on his way, and we go on our way griping about it when we really don't get the job done. But it's at this point that something is extremely important to all of us, and it's something that all of us as photographers have difficulty with, and it's trying to get our ability and our ego together. What happens is that a lot of times our ability is here, going along the line, our ability is here and our ego is way out here. Now what they should do is they should go parallel together. We should be honest with ourselves and say, where am I in photography right now? Where do I want to be in photography tomorrow and the next day and wherever? But so many times what happens is that our ability is right here going along a parallel line, and all at once the ego goes zipping way out here. And we get caught out on a limb out there, and we're telling everybody what a fine photographer we are, and somehow it's difficult to get back to our ability, which is back at this point. It's a much more important thing to me personally to try to have the ego and the ability right side by side, or going parallel together, so that when I say to an individual, out of the ego, I'm concerned about my photography. I believe in what I'm trying to do. When I say that, then I want to be able to reach down and pick up the ability right under that and say, here is what I'm trying to do. Here is what I'm trying to show you. And then all at once, everything works. But if my ego is way out here and my talent or my ability is way back here, then I'm having to rush way back at this point and pick up things that shouldn't be done that way at all. And so holding them together means that all at once we can become very honest, we can try to educate ourselves and try to educate others with whom we're involved in photography. There's another advantage that comes out of handicaps, and this is one that applied to a magazine, but it also can apply to newspapers, and I want to use it for that. Bureau chief at that point out on the West Coast, a writer, George Leonard, who was bureau chief for Look magazine, was talking about Paul Fusco. And he made a statement about Paul Fusco, Fusco and the magazine, that was, to me, both right and wrong. It's according to how you interpret it. He said, you generate a potent force when you take a talented individual and give him an institution to support him. Now, what Leonard is saying on the surface is right, but there are other things about it that can be very wrong. What I mean by that is this. The institution is, let's say, the newspaper, the publication you work for. That's the institution. It's a very strong thing because they can pay you a salary. It's a very strong thing because you can walk into a place and hopefully say, in your area, I'm with whatever your paper is. And a person will say, oh, yeah, sure, we're glad to have you. That's one of the strengths of an institution. And it's this kind of thing, as well as other things, that can back and support and give strength to an individual. Sometimes it gives us an opportunity to do extra things that we like to do. But the weakness of the institution, and this is okay as long as we understand it, the weakness of the institution is that it can also be like an octopus. It can form a normal pattern, and it can stay in that normal pattern and never change. And when somebody comes along rowing in the boat and says, I don't really like to be in this water down here, then the institution can say, something's wrong with this person because they're trying to rock the boat around here, and we've got everything all straight, working together, and here they are trying to destroy the institution. So the institution is both a strength and a weakness. If we look at the places where we work in that light, it will greatly help us to say, here is a force that will back me. That at the same time, I need at points to have wedges, the right kind of wedges, not the wrong kind of friction, but the right kind of wedges that will help me be creative and move forward and to say what is important to say in and for this institution. So Leonard was right in a way. It was a good thing that Fusco had the backing of a strong magazine, where he could walk into the world and say, I'm a photographer for Look magazine, and people would listen. That was right and good. But at the same time, Fusco at that point would have to realize that if the publication tried to use him as become an octopus and to suffocate him, then it was wrong. And again, applying our own work and our own actions and our own life here can make a difference. So it's at this point that we start making some other things of ourselves, some other determinations. And that has to do with how shallow our approach is, or how in depth